Ellen Gamrath was the chair of the Holden Village Board for 10 years. And so we thought we'd invite Ellen into this conversation instead of inviting one of the current directors or the business manager or one of those people for whom what they say might be taken as what's going to happen. Ellen can address some of the issues that are around buildings and taking care of them, redoing them, undoing them, whatever, in this particular area. So one reminder about forums at Holden 2, we'll end the forum precisely at 9:30, but you have an opportunity after that to stay here if you wish and continue the conversation. We try to limit it so that people know when they can be engaged in conversation and know that we can share together easily, but if you want to continue after that, that's fine, and then people can leave if they need to. Also, a reminder that Holden always tries to create a climate where all kinds of open conversation is done in the context of the gospel. Anything can be said to one another, but we try to be do this in the context then of civility and good manners as well. And the most of the, mostly, but that doesn't mean the conversation cannot be lively and heated. But also, but you're also encouraged to sort of observe, and I'll try and control that a little bit as the moderator to make sure everyone who wants to get in on the conversation has an opportunity to get in on the conversation. That's part of my job. So to begin with, each of our panelists here will share 3 to 5 minutes or so of their views on this subject and based on the context we suggested. And then we'll open it up for conversation. And I think we'll let Christopher start.
Okay. My experience is in residential construction. I originally worked for a contractor in Minneapolis that specialized in historical restoration. And we worked in a lot of old buildings, some of which were a good thing to restore, and some of them, maybe in retrospect, weren't. And in more recent years, I've moved further west, where there were less buildings that were worth saving. So I've been more involved with new construction, custom homes primarily, and some remodeling. And the question is always asked, you're going to remodel particularly, should we have just torn it down and started over again with a new house? And there's no absolute there. There's lots of things to consider. And one of the things that I'm very interested in is energy efficiency, and that always comes up when making that decision. A new home can be built to use much less energy than most older homes, and that's one big reason to build a new one. But yet, an old house represents a lot of embodied energy, a lot of energy that went into producing the building materials and transporting them and assembling them, and that can be preserved in a remodel. But yet many older buildings didn't use those materials very efficiently, and many new ones don't. And a lot of bad design and poor construction shouldn't be perpetuated, yet many new buildings are poorly designed and poorly constructed. Many buildings, not all old, are torn down because the space is desired for another type of building or use. And all these considerations are controlled but not determined by the budget. In the end, it's a matter of opinion, and hopefully the decision is made considering many factors and not just a few which you already may know the answer to before you start. And hopefully the end result is an improvement, a better building, rather than the opposite, which is often the case. A better, more efficient, more pleasing building. At Holden, the buildings are being improved, remodeled, and preserved as the budget permits, and none that I know of are slated for a demolition. The work is following the original designs for the most part, with the Forest Service's encouragement. However, at St. Olaf, my favorite building may be torn down. And that brings up another consideration when trying to decide whether to tear down a building or remodel it. And that is, do you like the building? Does it feel good? Is it a pleasing building? and I like Bitterbo very much, and that's why I think it should be saved.
Thank you. Peter, you can go next.
I don't know anything about Bitterbo Hall. The one comment I'll make about what Chris said is that there's a very lively movement in architecture right now that called the sustainable architecture movement. And I have to tell you that I have a very healthy cynicism about the whole movement. I think in large part it's a lot about sustaining the practice. But I think that the principles are good, and the principles are based upon all sustainability, and that's the three R's: reuse, reduce, and recycle. And the first one is reuse. That's the best way that you can, generally speaking, the best way that you can save energy, that you can be sustainable in terms of not using too many of the Earth's resources. And so I feel, I do have fairly strong feelings about using every effort possible whenever it comes to be. The situation arises about the uses for old buildings. The thing that I want, that I'm most interested in, though, is the legacy of Holden Village. I've been coming here since 1973, which is not that long when I look around at a lot of the other people in this room who probably have been coming for 10 years longer than I have. But I've seen a lot of changes occur here. I was thinking about it the other day. I've seen two kitchen remodels. I've seen a new pedestrian bridge. I've seen the changing room of the River Sauna. I didn't see the original River Sauna building go up. I've seen the addition to Koinonia. It used to be when you sat in this room, there were windows just like those over there right on this wall, and you could look out into the woods. But at some point, the community decided that they needed to have a smaller place in the winter to prepare meals and to eat. And so they added this whole back side of the building. It was originally going to be heated using passive solar ideas, and that's why there's that strange double wall on the south side. The heat was going to generate in there, and then it was going to be brought by fans down to where the pot shop is right now. That was actually going to be for rock storage. They were going to bring a lot of rocks in there and bring the air through there and charge up, store the heat in the rocks, and it was going to be heated in that way when the sun wasn't up. Only partially. It was never thought that that would be the whole answer. Well, the winter community did move down here, and it lasted for how many years, Ellen? 10 or even that long? They finally decided that it didn't work very well to move down here, so they decided to move back to the hotel to have their meals and have their winter community. And that's when this was converted into another meeting room and the pot shop and the crafts area. The crafts area used to be up in what we used to call the hospital, which is now Agape. Is it still called Agape? You never know. And they had a beautiful room overlooking the village and Buckskin Mountain and Copper. It moved up to one of the chalets once. I think it's been all over the place, too. The pot shop used to be in the basement of Narnia. I've seen a lot of other changes, too. I've seen numerous remodels. Peter participated in putting a lot of really beautiful siding in some of the lodges. I've seen the bathroom switch in the hotel upstairs. A lot of fire doors and new sprinkler systems and sheetrock and accessible additions. Frankly, I've never been all that impressed with the changes that occurred at Holden Village. The last one that I can think of that really moves me, and I really think I'm inspired when I see it, and I feel that ties into this place as well as the original buildings, is probably the pedestrian bridge, which was built in 1980. I don't think that that's the result of any ill intentions or not careful thought. I think everyone who has participated in all of the changes that have gone on in Holden Village in the last 20 years have had the absolute best of intentions. But there's never been a sense that these buildings and preserving them the way they are and really carefully understanding the character of these buildings, I don't think that people have thought carefully enough about it. They may have thought carefully about it, but I don't think carefully enough. I don't know what the answer to this is, because part of it has to do with institutional memory. There has been very little continuity at Holden Village. We've had numerous directors and business managers and people in charge of the physical condition of the buildings and the changes that occur. And a lot of those people have had their own projects. By the way, the Tekoa community, which was started at 25 Mile, I was here for that building, the Mine Museum, the changing of Tekoa into the bed and breakfast. I'll stop. So my question is, I wonder if any of you have been in similar situations. I don't really want to talk about specific things about the village. I just want to talk in general about ideas for, or how people feel about understanding the kind of quality of the place and how that can be preserved. That's all.
Thank you, Peter. I hope nobody's offended by the moderator having her. Okay, Ellen.
Okay, I'll respond to some of what Peter has said. We just lost her.
No, I'm fine. Go for it, Ellen.
It does end up being sort of a hodgepodge, but the bottom line is that any decisions that are made here go through a whole process. The Forest Service, this is Forest Service land, so anything that is done here has to receive Forest Service approval. And that goes through the board then. The proposals come from the board of directors, more specifically the trustees, and I don't know, Janet, what do they call them now?
The Management Council.
See, like everything else, names change. Management Council. They, in looking at the budget, determine what can be done and then make a proposal, the Forest Service locally and then sometimes regionally, so that you have to go through different layers, you know, government. Well, off and on we've had good and bad relationships with Forest Service, so that this then determines whether they give us this or this, you know, to a project. I think, well, then the money, whether the money is available. Also volunteer labor, you know, what's available as far as ability to get something done. I want to go back in time for just a minute, and although Peter said not to talk about specific projects, I think of this place that we're sitting, because in those early years, we came up in 63 for the first time. All of the sessions were held. Well, the Village Center was there for worship and for productions, drama, things, but all of the teaching was done in Narnia. And that, as the village built up, that was totally inadequate. This, as Peter mentioned, was lodging. It was like Lodge 4, Lodge 6. So the board proposed to the Forest Service that they pull out all of this and make it into another meeting room. And then for a long time, the Mine Museum was down where the library is now. This was done primarily with volunteer labor and became a center for teaching. Peter's already covered what happened then as far as the expansion, and that was something that had to be approved by the Forest Service. The one demolition that I am aware of, well, two, the garage, which was demolished by fire, and Lodge 2, Chalet 2, which was, went up in flames, I think, in the wintertime. We weren't around, but wasn't that it, Janet? And no one really ever knew the cause of that, but that, and anything that you want to do, the Forest Service is very strict. They cannot, you cannot change the outer appearance of a building. So that if you're going to put roofs on, they have to fit in with the scheme of it. And that's pretty limiting, because there might be things that would make better sense or that would be more functional if we had more leeway. When you spoke of Tekoa and that community, that began with, as a dream for a model community that would show how you could raise vegetables with different kind of
raised beds.
And fish culture, and that was gonna be down at Lucerne. Well, the Forest Service encouraged us to do it, and we poured energy, volunteer hours, and then Portland vetoed the idea after about 2 years, I think it was. So then they decided to try it down at where the bed and breakfast is, and Peter's already enumerated some of the difficulties down there. So that we get into these, it is sort of a patchwork kind of thing. And when you're dealing with volunteers, maybe someone will offer to donate a certain amount, and then what do you do with it? Do you accept it? Do you say, no, this doesn't fit into our plan? And Holden has not really had a long-range plan. They're developing one now. Is that right, Janet? Mm-hmm. And so that then you even get more piecemeal. Mm-hmm. But I think the function of this place has worked well.
This is exactly why I know that you can do things right, though. This room, this is one of the examples that I don't know the history of how this was changed or who did it, or was it designed by someone? Or
Nancy's telling.
Howard Hung teaches philosophy at St. Olaf College and was there most of the life of Iterable Hall.
Wonderful.
Still is. I just thought I'd make this natural connection. Yeah. So now I'm thinking about that. It is. I mean, he was a friend of the first director of the village. And it was actually, he did much of the rock connection and of all this. He did a lot of the work. He designed the room and did a lot of the work that made it. So if you're done, we can open it up with that. That's a nice little swing back to the whole beginning.
Right in this place.
Right in this place. And we've heard from Christopher about the issues around building, around, you know, like when you remodel, and what do you like and what works? It's both those things, and plus the ties that memory and heart and mind also bring to buildings. And whether it's in this place, which I also heard from Peter, despite, you know, along with his the opinions about how it's done, there's also a deep memory, like you said, having been coming here for 25 years almost now. And what that is, and from Ellen, Holden's a nice little encapsulation, isn't it, of all the issues around government and administration that we all have to deal with anytime you're dealing with buildings, which was why in the blurb we wrote about it, I said, have you been in a place yet that recently did a sports stadium? Which also has many layers of choices around a whole larger community. So the floor is open for your comments, questions.
I want to add one more thing.
Okay, you were right there.
As we're sitting here, talking. As we're sitting here, we can see each other. Right. But when it was originally built, there was, you see the black, it came down, there was a hood, and we had lovely fires here, which were very cozy. Two factors, it was a fire hazard. You couldn't see the speaker. You had to duck down to look, and people couldn't see each other. Well, during Elmer Witt's administration, that got cut off, and you have no idea what the furore was about that. Probably the same as St. Olaf, right? That's all. Just a little addendum.
I still miss the fire.
It was such a nice idea.
I was just thinking as we were speaking about the philosophy, or someone was speaking a while back about the philosophy of Holden is do, redo, and do-do. You know, it's kind of like, you know, that's how it happens. That's exactly what happens. And it's good. You know, like Christopher was saying about the building at St. Olaf, I really like it, therefore I want to save it. In a way, that's kind of what happens at Holden. People have this idea or dream of Toccoa or having a kitchen that's really more intimate rather than the huge, you know, kind of industrial center of the dining hall, and it sort of gets carried along, and then someone does the work because they have the energy for it. And that's what I really like about Holden, even though it's very inefficient and it's very, it doesn't make sense, and it may not be aesthetically super pleasing, but it's very cared for, aside from that.
I've been involved in lots of conversations over the years about how to make that all more efficient, have less redoing, and there's always lots of ideas, but I haven't seen that change. And I think there's an advantage to the way it is, and it creates something which you couldn't plan, which you couldn't, a long-range planning committee couldn't come up with, I don't think, because it's many, many people over many, many years that knit together to make this thing happen. And if one group at one time and place were to come up with a long-range plan, it would be a whole different thing and not as good, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But maybe more efficient.
I think we have to remember, too, that over the years, different people have different ideas about and visions, but to try to remember why we're here, what the main focus is. And that my example is, I talked to Jan about this the other night. There was at one point, 8-10 years ago, the idea of let's rebuild Chalet 2, which burned to the ground. Well, okay, let's get some ideas. If we had the money, let's just say, well, how would we build it? Well, it was strongly suggested, because Peter got sort of involved and maybe he had some ideas, but they told him, some folks told him, well, we want 4 apartments. It can look like Chalet 1, but it's got to be 3 or 4 apartments, and each one has to have a kitchenette, and each one. Well, that's not why we're here. We have apartments, you can go to Chalet. And in fact, that was done to Chalet 7 in some ways. I mean, there's an apartment. It's not Chalet 7 anymore. It's compartmentalized. It's not a community. There's no living room, I don't think. Is there a living room anymore? Or it's just...
There's 2 living rooms.
Yeah, it's different. It's not, you know, we don't gather the same as... No. Well, you know, was that the same vision to build those kinds of things? Didn't happen, but almost did.
Yeah, Anthony?
We don't even worry about Chalet.
Yeah, they're houses. Yeah, right. Think of a house, and people live in a room.
I can understand. Yeah. But so, we that just come for a week,
right.
we don't know. I was told it was employee housing.
Yeah.
So there's a difference in terms of history and how people experience community that
right.
is affected by the buildings and how they're laid out and yeah. is not. Also,
yeah.
Anthony, and then okay. Anthony had a hand.
A couple things to say. One is that the hodgepodge is a result to there not being some kind of process of strategic planning. And I'm a proponent that you can do strategic planning, but the difference is that you must begin with understanding the multiple and the deep layers of stories that exist. Strategic planning is something that you can't do in a season. I'm finding, as I work with churches and faith communities, that it's about a 3-year process. The first 2 years is about just getting clear about all the multiple stories and understanding in an appreciative kind of way, where is the light? And what's the big vision? And out of that, you can develop some, what we might call scenarios of possibility. Because in essence, people will give to something that's green, that has some flesh on it, rather than something that is kind of a piece here and a piece there and a piece here. And I'm finding that all over the country in a range of big church, small church, hospital, nursing home, whatever. And so I would challenge that. Strategic planning is probably helpful and useful, probably in the traditional way that it's been done, where you're just focusing on, you begin with the question, well, what should we do with the buildings? And that's sort of the last question. The question is, what's our story, what's our legacy, what's our history, and how might that be reflected in our future? And then what is the architecture required to support that vision? The second thing I'll say in response to the interval question is, I have been on the staff at St. Olaf and also spent an interim there, so I have a great love for that campus. I went to school at Capital University in Columbus, Ohio. The main building, which was the freshman dorm when I started there in 1971, had been a Civil War hospital. It also had housed slaves in the Underground Railroad. They decided to tear the building down because they assumed that the alumni would never raise the money to redo the building. It was an assumption. And the next thing people knew, and we probably weren't as quick as some of the lawyers in Minneapolis, the building was down. And you got this invitation to buy a brick. And so, 2 things happened. The Civil War history, the history of the Underground Railroad went up in smoke, and the building that everybody, from the time the school started in 1853, to 1983, had spent their freshman year in that building. And I just want to say that when I go past, when I go back to campus now, it's a lawn, so there's a big hole there. And it's a hole in the heart of the legacy, in the heart of the story, without giving an opinion on either book.
I think that, that what, you know, when I look at Holden and what has to enter in is the practicality of it. I love Holden. I've been coming for 15 years, and I like the sameness every time I come back. But I also recognize it's got old plumbing. And are we going to spend our lives being sentimental and reading a phrase that says, when it's yellow, let it mellow, because the drain fields can't take it and the plumbing can't take it? You know, at what point, and as you said, what are the important stories and what are the stories that aren't important that it can maintain its purpose? But I feel that, you know, the practical aspect has to be looked at. I mean, I think that, you know, the hotel and the dining room, I think it's great what they did to the kitchen, because trying to help this team or work in that kitchen, I didn't do a lot, but it was a terrible, terrible arrangement. And I think that, you know, times change, people change, things change, situations change. And I think it's very important for a place like Holden to maintain the environment and the atmosphere, but to maintain the practicality too.
It'd be all right with me if they put new plumbing in Etterbo. Thank
you. You know, but where do the stories stop and where does the practicality take
they,
over?
But what if they put, what if they covered up the wood paneling with textured plaster and put gold-toned shower fixtures in the bathrooms and basically just fixed it up in the most expedient way and maybe the least expensive way and the way that was functional but really didn't respect the architecture of Iterbo?
No.
But it wasn't wood paneling, it was some kind of composite.
Well, it was beaver board. I'm always proselytizing for architecture. I'm not only an architect, but I teach architecture at the university. But I was thinking the other day, there's this great painting by William Blake, and it's God as the Architect. Do you know the one I'm talking about, Nancy? He's kind of leaning over like this, and his hand is down, and his fingers are spread like this, and there are these kind of rays of light coming from his fingers, and he's creating the world. And so the comparison is to God as an architect. And I think of that process of creation and how, you know, all of the creatures on the earth, how absolutely functional they are and absolutely beautiful they are and how varied they are, but every one is this incredible thing. And I think that as we make things, that what makes us probably closest to God is the fact that we do create things. We're the only animal that does, really. And when we create things, I think that that's actually a mirror of what God does. And so I'm always siding on the side of really understanding what we do every time that we make something. And I think that that goes, I just love your thing about understanding the stories. You know, understanding the stories of Holden Village means understanding the mine community and understanding what that was. And then understanding the way that we've occupied this space now for 34 years. And that's all my only question is, that runs up against this whole notion of a community that's a living, breathing, it's a very different kind of a community than many places. Nobody lives here for their entire lives. People who have been coming up here for 25 or 35 years aren't here all the time. There's no one like that. There's no one who's lived in this village and in this community continuously. So where does that institutional memory come from? I don't know the answer. And as I said, I think that everyone who has worked at Holden Village is marvelous. They've donated time, they've donated energy, people have donated materials. I just wonder if there's not some way that it can't be done in a more thoughtful manner.
Yeah.
Well, several disjointed ideas are running through my mind as I hear all this. I'm a very practical person. I feel that a building must be functional, it must be economical, it must be aesthetically pleasing, and in the case of Holden, that aesthetics must, in my opinion, maintain its heritage, the product should be as close to those of its founding as possible in general appearance and feel, though accomplishing modern day purposes, meaning don't bring in your gold faucets. I'm assuming you're being extreme to make the point, etc. And when we first started this, I had visions that you probably know from Tacoma of two instances. We have Pantages Theater, like many cities, of old time, beautiful, lovely crystal in it. It's a miniature theater from Europe. It's a joy to go there. So they decided to bring in more arts and added a building adjoining it to the common wall to bring our theater group into. It looks like a giant Quonset hut. It had, because it was cheap, they didn't have much money. It had corrugated steel roof on it, square lines, next to this beautiful classical building. It's got the eyesore. And yet, a lot of people, they don't comment, they don't seem to realize that it doesn't faze them. On the other hand, also in Tacoma, we have the old train station going way back, like, well, as far back as the Northwest goes, and a very rounded look, brick, classical. And then they built, or just finished building, Washington Historical Museum adjoining it, a very big building going down the street. They kept the basic architecture from the train station with the same curves, arches, brick, and yet it's a new building. It's obvious it's a new building, but it relates to the old so that it's pleasing. And I think these are some of the concepts they should keep in mind here, that we're living in another century or another time from when it was built, not a century, but a lot of years have gone by. So yes, there's change. Another thing completely different that's going through my mind is I'm on the board of 138-unit condominium townhouses in Tacoma. And I'm seeing a parallel in that both Holden and our condominium are governed by boards, many lay people, as well as a few professionals that come and go. Our board members are on there 3 years and they're gone. A lot of them are old people that are gone. We don't have this institutional memory, and Holden for the most part doesn't either. And I'm finding, I've been there now 17 years and served on the board several times, and I'm finding that the board will bring up ideas that were considered in the past and decided against. They'll want to change something that a board did previously without good reasons. Now, I'm not against change, but the point I'm making is there needs to be a reason for the change and not have today's board just change what was done a few years ago without real thought and consideration. Not just for change's sake, or you're seesawing back and forth. You're doing something you think's worthwhile, but you're really going back to what it was before when people were dissatisfied and wanted to change. So if you try to get some kind of institutional memory, or I hope you have good documentation and minutes and someone looks at them, to see the pros and cons before you make decisions.
I think Holden does have an institutional memory.
Good, I'm glad.
It's not a formalized thing, but it's very inclusive that way.
You mean through, like, we're saying here people have been here a long time that bring things
up? A lot of people continually come back and sit on their porches and talk about what it was like 20 years ago.
And board membership is 12
years.
That is
positive,
right? 12 years, not
About the memory, that sort of,
By the reputation, yeah. It's very good.
Yeah. This doesn't relate to Holden, but it relates to what she said, and Peter may have more information on this than I do, because we were fairly new in Oregon, but up on Mount Hood, they had Timberline Lodge, and if you've ever been there, Timberline Lodge is very rustic looking and great big old timbers, and it's a beautiful structure and a lot of stone, and Then there were so many skiers coming in, I think they felt it would destroy the lodge, so they wanted to build a day lodge right up there so that the people who were coming up to the mountain just for the day to ski. Well, the controversy around that was phenomenal because the debate was, does it blend in with the mountain and look like the old building, you know, or is it more reflective of the current times, which is was a fairly contemporary structure? And I know there was a lot of controversy around it, and I wasn't terribly involved at the time. That's why Peter may know more than I. But they ended up with this modern structure. So now you go up onto Mount Hood, and there's this beautiful timberline lodge that blends right into the mountain. And then to me, there's this horrible eyesore that's just like your Quonset hut. I mean, it's a very contemporary building right across the driveway. And I find it really difficult when I go up there. I mean, it's just, to me, it's like music that suddenly goes out of tune to see this building. Now, I am sure in several hundred years, people are going to go and say, my, isn't this a beautiful rustic building? But right now, I just hate that building.
They may not. That too, it's uglier than sin.
Yeah.
they may not.
We agree on
They may never like it in 100 years.
I don't know the building very well. Mm-hmm. I do know that you can't, it's one of the dangers is that you can't rebuild the past. Mm-hmm. There's no way they could build a building like Timberline Lodge anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the cases where the cure is worse than the disease is when they try. Mm-hmm. I think the whole sort of spate of postmodern architecture that we've gone through in the last 10 or 15 years is an example of people trying to make historical-looking buildings that are new. There are, frankly, the whole economy of building has changed so radically in the cost of labor in comparison to the cost of materials has skyrocketed. And so there's never going to be a way that you can build the same way that you did in the past. However, I think that you can build with extraordinary sensitivity to the past and to the site. And some of the slides that I'm showing in my talk,
like you're showing the restroom,
you know,
fit more in with the site.
Right. I think that you can build in a modern way using modern technology. I think you can build modern buildings that work beautifully if you really understand what the old buildings are about, what their spirit is, what the spirit of the site is, and then you respond appropriately. So I also want to make that clear that I don't think that rebuilding the past is possible. And that's why it's important to save what we have, if at all possible.
But the new can blend with the old when they're side by side, don't you think?
I think it can, yeah. But I don't think it can by copy, because the copy won't look nearly as good as the original.
That's right.
I think at Union Station they actually did a pretty good job of building a new building that echoes the old without being just like the old.
So if Holden were to build a new building, and they say, okay, we want to expand the community and we really need another building and we're going to put another building right up there.
Building garage right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's building the garage now.
Mm-hmm.
Does it need to look like these buildings? Does it need to be like that Swiss place you showed that had all the shingles on the outside, but on the inside it was, you know, a lot different? But
apparently not.
What's the garage
going to look like? Describe the garage, principal.
Well, the garage is won't be anything like any of the buildings here. It'll be all metal with a 412 pitch big box.
But it's removed from the village. But you take that structure and you stick it right down here.
But it's
right. Well, that's why I'm sure because it's separated. It's sort of an industrial zone up there.
Yeah.
It's like the portal.
It's like the portal museum. Yeah.
Which we built.
The airport in Washington, D.C. just opened. Yeah, I don't know if any of you have been there, but it's a classic. The original airport was a classic original airport with its sort of deco design.
Is this National Airport?
This is National Airport.
Yeah.
And then they just added to it, and they basically took the energy or the sort of spirit of the original building and created something quite dynamic where it's very open and sweeping, and then They took local artists who created major pieces of sculpture to fit with this sort of sweeping piece that sort of mimicked the Deco area, but it was sort of in the sort of modern era, postmodern era that we're in, and they did a beautiful job. I think they've got all kind of acclaim. I don't know if you guys have seen the pictures of it, but it just opened and it's phenomenal. And it's an example, I think, of what you were pointing out. You can't really recreate the Deco area, but you can sort of work with the energy of it in creating something that's postmodern and quite special.
Everything always depends on the circumstance, too.
Yes.
When I was actually asked by the director about ideas for Chalet 2, I thought about it for a long time, and my final recommendation was, I think you ought to rebuild Chalet 2. Because the context there is so strong with all of the chalets next to each other. And basically, it is a construction technology that would be able to be done now. It's not that far in the past. And so that was my recommendation to Scott. Rebuild Chalet 2.
Yeah. But maybe without the beaver board.
Beans, I come once in 20 years. I'm a Methodist, but I can't say lots. But you gave history on Monday of some of the chalets are historically, and what you just said is just sort of sounds like the opposite.
Well,
I mean, not Chalet 2, but those chalets have nothing to do with a Lutheran mission here.
Right, I agree.
Why don't you say it again?
Because yeah,
I never caught on because I
was talking, this will be very brief. I was trying to explain architecture by talking about the tasks of architecture. And Christian Norberg Schultz, a Norwegian architectural historian, lists sort of tasks in ascending order. The first one is to provide for physical needs, the next one for functional needs, the next one for social needs, and finally the last one is cultural, which relates to our religion and our cosmology and the cultural, you know, sort of habits of our society. But what I was saying was that Holden Village is a really good example of a built environment that was built for a society that was a mining community. And that society was extraordinarily hierarchical. And the chalet circle had meaning. That's where the bosses lived. And this is where the peons lived. And what I said was, that still exists today. We're a completely different community that doesn't, that tries not to be hierarchical. But that physical artifact, to some extent, gets in the way of the way we operate here. Because coming here for many years, there have always been sort of a sense of the people up on Chalet Circle and the people down here. That's not intentional. It's a result of this physical artifact that we've been left with. However, that doesn't mean that I'm in favor of tearing down all the chalets. Because I, in some ways, that historical memory is good, and that's why I would. And as I said, it's so strong there, the architectural context. That's why I recommended that it just, if they were going to put something there, that they just rebuild what had been there in the past.
Well, yes. Yeah, but thank you. I want to reinforce as an outsider,
nobody's an outsider.
With I consider a lot of experience, this is or that, Mr. Harris made a very important comment, and maybe you can obviously say a lot better because I can't remember exactly, but what you want in a building campaign, and I would say you've got to get your act together, and you know, you might think what all the church colleges do when they want a building campaign going, you know, and what, let's say, buttons they push on us. So I'll give you my estate. And I'm picking up here that, much to my surprise, and I'm really not sure when you started, for example, because you named that, I guess. That's 30 years.
Right, 35, 36 years. 36
years. I am sitting here overwhelmed that, I could say more timidly, you haven't got your act together.
In what respect?
Well, I don't know who you is here. I mean, this is just sort of a general conversation.
The board of directors.
Maybe.
In what respect isn't the acting in?
Well, the other one we wrote down here is, for number one, you need a mission statement.
We do have a mission statement. There is one in the other room.
Okay, I mean, I don't know it. And I don't know which is, that's just what I want to say.
The mission statement happens to be hanging in the...
No, but I came 20 years ago with a lady I still know, Lutheran, and I'm still, as I say, the reputation you have, and that I come to get fit, be it architecture or coal mining, anything, I just come and visit, besides religion, just get fit for 1 week, a liberal arts education. And other people come to climb mountains, and today, or Mr. Fish, whoever's been here, I mean, I got a whole education about your mountains in 60 minutes, because I'm from Minnesota, not Washington. You know, just blows my mind, and it'll stay with me forever. And I don't know anything else in America quite like this.
Thank you,
Robert. No, do you? I'm curious.
Yeah.
No.
Perfect.
And back to St. Olaf's for a half second. I'm a Hammond University grad, and I don't know if your hall, because I hardly know your campus, even if I grew up in St. Paul. But Hammond saved Old Main. Is that your building, is Old Main, that you're wanting to save?
Either both.
Old Main's the one they already saved.
They already saved Old Main. I don't know what it is. I'll get up there soon, because I have two nieces who graduated. But, I'll say save it a little bit, because that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about Holden. But you have a huge reputation. Work on it.
Well, what you're saying that
here's the whole mission.
But you haven't, not that, like, my one lawyer was Mayo Clinic, and they have a hodgepodge of architecture that blow your mind. Like Peter said, you can't rebuild, another 1929 classic building. You just can't. But what's the train of thought? But you have not some way kept a consistent board of governors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They have 12-year terms.
Okay.
It's probably one of the most consistent and strongest boards that ever existed in the church institution.
I didn't pick that up. Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Very consistent.
Okay.
Very
wonderful.
Very committed. Very consistent.
Well,
long time.
Or this would be this good.
I mean, very supportive.
Very supportive.
This place clicks. I mean, organization for the person walking in off the bus, it clicks.
Yes. What you're saying is that we fulfilled the function for you. In spite of the buildings, or in spite of some of some of the little flaws that you don't see.
It's hard to,
it's a conversation.
I don't care what kind of buildings.
Yeah.
I personally.
It's hard to argue about maybe architectural qualities that aren't harmonious against peace and justice. You know, I mean, the larger mission of Holden Village goes on, and in the big picture, what the architecture looks like, it's relatively insignificant. But what you just said, in spite of, my contention is...
I didn't mean that.
Well,
it came out.
No, I know, but I'm using you. I'm using it. You know, that mission shouldn't occur in spite of the architecture, and I don't think it does for the most part. And I think that architecture has the ability to provide a context for this community and the activities and the peace and justice and wholeness that go on here.
One example, I'd like to tell a quick story that lifts out maybe out of the Holden piece into the broader thing, and it comes from St. Paul, Minnesota, where you're from, but it's a Lutheran story. And it has to do with Luther Seminary, which is in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it has a building in the middle of it about the same vintage as Iterbo Hall called Bachman Hall. Mm-hmm. And this story also connects to Holden Village, because
The person who initiates this story is a person named Mark Opgrand, who cooked at Holden Village in the 70s, when he was an old friend of Holden. And he was a student at Luther Seminary, and he's a wonderful photographer and likes to take pictures. And one day he was walking around Bachman Hall and he saw a woman taking pictures all around Bachman Hall. She was inside and outside, taking pictures at the corners, looking up at the ceilings, doing all this stuff. So he followed her around for a while, and finally, when it was an opportune moment, interrupted her and asked her what she was doing. And she said, "Well, I'm taking pictures of Bachman Hall." "Why are you taking pictures?" "But, well, I'm an architecture student at the University of Minnesota." "Well, why are you doing a special project or whatever?" And she said, "Well, my architecture professor told me that this building is the worst example of the architecture of its type in the Twin Cities. And so I'm over here doing a paper on this terrible, awful building." Well, shortly after that happened, the King of Norway visited Luther Seminary. This was a big deal for this retrograde Norwegian Lutheran site. And the same Mark Opgrand took pictures of the King of Norway's visit. The king appears in none of the pictures. The entire pictures are of the Secret Service people that came and prepared the campus for the visit of the King of Norway, this person who used to walk out of his house to go ski without and ride on the bus and stuff. But anyway, but the point was, is here is the supposedly worst example of architecture in all of the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it becomes the centerpiece, one, for a royal visit, and two, for an absolutely wonderful series of slides mm-hmm. that talks out of the heart of this, of tells a story without even the core of the story being present. You know, the king never shows up in any slide. But it tells the story beautifully. So the whole issue of old buildings, new buildings, uses, things like that, all have to do with this combination of, even if it might be terrible arching or Quonset huts or whatever, at the same time, or Holden Village mixed up, or however, you know, like you're pointing out, what happens in the midst of all of that makes all the difference. And that doesn't mean to be a, we have still 6 minutes, but I wanted to tell that one story. Janet.
I've been trying to shut up, but I want to share a story too. Right now,
it takes 3 years.
What's that?
It takes 3 years. That's right.
And it has to do with this room, going back to the story about this room. And those of us who've had the gift of being able to live through the winter in this community, think of this room as our worship space, this place where we come together nightly and pray and struggle and are together. And this center thing is what brings us together. Well, my colleague, Martin Wells, had a dream not long ago. I think it was this past winter. Because we think a lot about the future of Holden as directors. And he had a dream that Holden was gone. And this was years in the future, and that for one reason or another, the Forest Service solved the tailings problems and there was no need for us to be here up here at all, or something burned down or something, but it was gone. And hikers came through, and what they found was this stone circle where we had all prayed. To me, that's the memory, that's the story, that's the essence of what Holden is.
I think that couldn't be a better closer. And it was made by somebody who probably lived in Iterbo Hall. We do have a couple more minutes if anybody would like to get... Can we put an or in when we're talking about buildings? Yes, we can. We just have the church. Yes.
Can I just ask a question? How feasible... I went to Old for 2 years and I'm going back here this fall. How feasible... The Lions Paws, there's some offices on the first floor. They don't let you go up to the top floors. I heard the last year they had it as a dormitory. They let you re-cavock in there. So, but how feasible is it to refurbish Iterbo into something functional for a college today? Because I don't see the point of keeping it as a condemned building on campus. What could you? I don't know. What could you make Iterbo into that's feasible besides where we go to listen to some speakers are.
But what they want to put there is a new student center.
Yeah, I'm
already. And it probably wouldn't be feasible as that.
Come on.
And that, I think that's the main incentive for tearing it down, is they want the space.
Oh, it's a prime location. Building too.
Well,
how do they get to be condemned? Intentional neglect.
They could certainly repair whatever it is that the problems are, and it's a matter of whether they have the incentive to spend the money necessary and willingness to relocate the new student center. And two decisions that they've made a long time ago.
Is the present student center too small?
Apparently.
Never seen too small in the area.
They've received a gift to build a new one, which is a further incentive to build a new one.
They're missing student offices and that sort of thing for organizations. It's, I worked there 15, 20 years ago, and it was short then. That's the thing.
One more comment, Lynn.
At some point, buildings have to go. Or we'd still be living in Roman temples, wouldn't we? So he says they don't. But is the need now, has this always been a need for many generations to keep the old, or is it a current phenomena of the speed and the rapid change that we're all undergoing and kind of the impersonal world that we're living in now, where communities, like I think Jim last week was saying, you know, suburbs are really not communities because you don't have a lot of different layers in it. It's all the same. Is there a stronger need now to keep the old because we're searching for that sense of community? Or has this always been a phenomenon that even the Romans didn't want to tear down their temples or something?
Marva, and then that's probably the last official comment.
Related to that, I've been thinking a lot of this as I watch our town expand, and then the more inner circles die and get boarded up. And you think about Europe, where there's no more place to expand, so they always take care to preserve in a way that makes it still usable. It seems that the United States has been enormously disgusting in wasting central cities by just expanding out and boarding up the old. And it seems for the sake of having enough land to grow enough food for the world, that we can't forever pave over land and constantly be building new, that we need in the United States to learn from the Europeans about rehabilitating and saving for the sake of the future.